was still around when they were doing the Hamilton Music Awards.
Yes, I was. Yeah, that was a great time. I miss that.
Well, how old were you when you won that award?
How old was I? Ooh, good question.
Like, were you just coming out of high school? Like
2013
or?
Maybe was the year.
Uh-huh.
So 2013. Seven, 8 years ago.
So math wasn't your strong point in school.
It was more no, it's not my strong point on a weekend. Weekends are my brain off day. I just turn it off, and as soon as Friday hits, it's about 3:20. I just turn my brain off, and that's what it's going to be like the rest of the weekend.
What group were you in when you won the award?
Allotrope was our band's name at the time. Yeah, we were a rock band. We were working with Nick Blagona.
He
kind of taken us under his wing and really coached us a lot on our music and everything like that, and suggested that we apply for it. And he really kind of pushed us and said, like, you guys go for this. And it worked out really well.
I mess things up because I was a selfish fool.
Now, did you guys end up touring as Allotrope across Canada and going to the States at all?
We had some technical barriers, I guess you could say, when it came to that, because some of the people in the band were still in high school at the time.
Right.
And I am 4 years older than the drummer. So we had lots of opportunities, but because they wanted to just, you know, focus on high school and getting into a university, it just didn't really work out too well.
Right.
And yeah, we took a bit of a break when the other one got into university, and whereas like I kept going through university. That was kind of something that was definitely prioritized. We did a Battle of the Bands tour through Southern Ontario, and it went really well, actually. We were able to pick up some cool words at different places, and we had a funny situation. We played the Western Battle of the Bands. None of us went to Western, so I don't know how we pulled that one off. But when we got there, they had this panel of judges, and all the judges were there from different labels and A&R reps and stuff like that. And we got feedback at the end of every single session, and their feedback was that we shouldn't play so many cover songs, and we only played one cover song. So I thought... That must be a compliment, right?
That is a compliment. What was the sound like of Allotrope back then? Was it an indie grungy kind of rock sound?
It was a really tough one for us because we had so many influences. That was literally like our, so we called ourselves Allotrope because of the it's actually the term for carbon. And because carbon can be any form from like graphite to like diamonds to you name it, we named ourselves Allotrope because we had so many influences. We loved jazz, we loved rock, we loved heavy rock and metal, and we liked pop and stuff. So it kind of just ended up turning into this, you know, melting pot of influences. But the one that I think we were most known for was a heavier rock sound, especially since our guitarist and drummer were so influenced by bands like... Alter Bridge, Foo Fighters. They really like that kind of music, so that tended to come out more in our music than other genres.
I felt like a ghost that followed your clothes. Couldn't get through when I needed you. I begged for your help. You left me in hell. Never would show when I needed you so.
Early time period, there's like all this transitions of different styles and influences from everyone in the band. The band breaks up over time, of course. Now, what does that do for James Alphonse in regards to, are you still doing that style of music, or are you doing the more indie soul thing just after that, or does it take a longer transition?
Interesting. So we actually had kind of like a weird situation. So in that time in between, I'd actually decided that I was going to just do some solo playing and just do cover shows and gigs like that. And just I actually ended up doing a solo album with Nick. I'd always wanted to do a variety of genres of music. So I wanted to do jazz. I wanted to do like Jack Johnson, low key, mellow pop, acoustic pop. And I wanted to do everything pop oriented and jazz and blues and stuff. So I made this big all of that album with Nick, and I put some Allotrope songs and some songs that I did with another artist on there. And it was kind of just like a random pop album that I did acoustically with Nick Lagona. And I got a little band together. Some of them were from Allotrope, and so they would just join me for that kind of stuff. And one of our drummer, I think, was still in school, so he wasn't playing with us at all. And it actually, we got a lot of shows. We kept really busy. I had some friends saying, like, we really want to help you out. We believe in you. We love these songs. And he actually started booking shows for me. So we were pretty much packed every single week. We have a full weekend of shows. And it started getting a little busy. And I started realizing, you know what? I think what I really want to do is I want to focus on pop. So we got contacted by this guy. Allotrope actually got contacted from the Hamilton Music Awards. He'd seen that we got that award, Best New Group of the Year. And he wanted to work with us. And he'd been the bassist with like Fifi Dobson, if you can remember her at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
He helped out with Francesco Yates and his artist development, who's like awesome. I love Francesco Yates' music and taste of music. And he'd toured the world. He was with the label that Prozac and Nelly Furtado were on at some point. And so he said, hey, like, this is kind of my background. I'm producing in the area here. Here's some artists I've worked with. What do you think? And the guys, even though we hadn't played for like a few years, said this could be a really cool opportunity as a revival for Allotrope. And as that was happening, I'd talked to him saying, like, you know, I'm doing my own pop stuff. What do you think about it? And he said, honestly, I'd love to work with you in a more in-depth capacity if you're interested. So he actually ended up getting Duncan Coutts from Our Lady Peace, their bassist. And we wrote a song together called I'll Be Your Wall. And that's probably the one that you'd heard from the Shake, Rattle and Rave, which is their Christmas show. And so, yeah, we worked on writing songs together. Just the three of us and Stephen Dowell, who'd worked for a country writing company, a publishing company, I believe, fantastic lyricist. And they kind of trained me a little bit on songwriting. But we had this issue where sorry, this is a long answer for it.
Yeah, but go ahead, buddy.
We had this issue that I couldn't find work after, because I'd really wanted to do my PhD after my master's degree. I'd met someone from Denmark. So we were trying to figure out, how do we make this work out? And I hadn't, like, so I got my teaching degree, and that's naturally where I would have gone. But because I was focused on my education, I hadn't gotten any experience in the workforce. So applying for jobs without a reference was just too tough. So England was the one place that I could go with no references, that they just needed teachers badly. So I ended up moving to England for a year, and the project kind of took a time out. It was on a bit of a hiatus, and it was so tough getting used to working there. I mean, the first time coming into England, like, it's like a catch-22. You need to have a house to be able to get a bank, and to get a bank, you need to have a house. So you're trying to figure out, like, how can anyone possibly do this? And so I didn't get paid for the first 2 or 3 months living there. And I managed to find, so on induction day, I met this Australian couple, and they wanted to stay together because we just thought it would be better. You know, two couples sharing makes the rent go down quite a bit. And we'd found this flat. And so they actually ended up having to get their friends to use their bank account for the deposit, so that we could get a place, so that we could get a bank, so that we could use the bank to actually pay for our place. So it was like this huge long process, but the bank needs to see a bill first. So we had to wait a year to get our bills. And then I went and got my bank about two and a half months in. And then I got paid for the first time. And after all of this, like, stressfulness, just trying to, you know, get settled into London, England, finally get into the place. And then I got sick because I have a chronic illness. And oh, I've just been putting so much time every day after school trying to get a bank. I had a taxi that was like $100 to go to this place out. And like, I don't even remember how far away it was. I had to take a taxi to get there right after school because they all close at like 4 or 5 o'clock. So as soon as you finish work, you're running to the bank, and then they're saying, "Do you have any bills on you?" So I'd been told this one bank, if you go out here, they'll get you started. And I get there, I sit down, and it's like 10 minutes to close apparently, but they still set up an appointment then. And he said, "Oh, I thought this was just an inquiry meeting." And I said, "No, I need a bank." Nah. And so the guy ended up like saying like, "I can't with what you have. However, I figured out this other way." And so he gives me this bank, and he actually stayed later than he had to, which I really appreciated. Sure. But then I'd spent this crazy fee just to get a bank that isn't actually really from England, but at least allowed me to get paid. And then like a week later, I come back from, we decided to go to Scotland just as a kind of like, you know, we made it. We finally have a bank. And we come back and we go to the bank just to see if I could get my partner on the same as mine. And he says, "Oh, you could have easily gotten a bank with this. Why didn't that guy just give you a bank?" And I'd been going to banks for 2 months.
Oh, no.
It's inside of me. It's inside of you. So we had it so well, but I don't mean it ain't true. If you're ready, if you're ready, I'll lift you up, I'll break you fall, come take my hand, I'll be your wall. If you need a friend, lover, just call, I'll be your man, I'll be your wall, I'll be your wall.
Just, it was like, it was so stressful. So anyways, I ended up going into the hospital for a little while, just from all of the stress, trying to constantly go to all these banks right after work and not working, and then, you know, working a new job, learning an entire new curriculum. So there was like, you know, half a year of just getting settled in. And finally, when I'm settled in, I'm like, okay, I can play music again. So I started playing shows and playing the song around London, England. And I got I love the music scene in Europe.
Sure.
I have to say that.
So all of those experiences that you went through, are they significant in changing of your sound of who you are now? Are you drawing upon that from what you saw in England and your experiences?
Yeah, you know what? Like, I think one thing that I'd learned, yes. So to just answer your question right away, yes. And the reason why is actually a really weird reason. I've always been the person that whenever somebody says, hey, did you want to do this? I just say yes. So I was a bit of a yes man at home. Right. So I'd been doing working with the Rotary Club, volunteering. I was a student guide at my university. So I'd help students with vision troubles, disabilities, getting to their places. So I'd walk students that were blind to class to make sure they got there safely. And I would help students take notes so that they could help other students with disabilities. And I was on the MyRespect, which helped to promote respect on campus. And I volunteered with so many things. And then I was doing music all the time, playing shows all the time. And I was, obviously doing university as well on top of this. So all of those things just constantly consumed my time. And in England, because I was so focused on just work, I didn't want to complicate anything and I didn't know anybody there. So no one was asking me to volunteer or do anything. So I just had time to myself. And I also, my family got this family account of Apple Music, and I'd been such an indie junkie that, I used SoundCloud and MySpace, and I just listened to whatever indie artists were putting out there. Mm-hmm. That I started just kind of saying what's out there? What do I enjoy? And so I think it kind of was more of my music discovery kind of year, where I was just really listening to different artists and getting a feel for what's out there and trying to see what really makes me just inspired. Mm-hmm. And I started really getting a connection to pop. And I think my partner has a big role in that as well. Right. And yeah, so it changed my approach in that I started gaining a bit more of an openness and having time to focus on that.
Tell me about, so we're in Hamilton. And it's 2021. Of course, there's the COVID pandemic. Tell me about the single that you released back in November with the video that accompanied it.
Yeah, sounds great. The song is called We Can Do Better. And We Can Do Better, I've always had this thing that I do where I kind of mix in two concepts with each other. So it was partly about a friend and myself who'd gone through just a sour relationship, I guess you can say, where the one person had been kind of trying to say that this isn't a good relationship. You can do better. You're better, and all those sorts of things. And us just really trying to fight and work for it and trying to keep it going when the other person wasn't fully there for it. But there was also this concept of the environment, actually, surprisingly. A lot of the messages that I want to put out there, I usually put through relationships, because I feel that my relationship, for example, in environmental ways to the earth is kind of, that's how I view it almost, is I have a relationship that I need to respect with the earth and what's going on. And so I'd actually been hearing about from England how they actually, with shirts and stuff like that, they actually... it's cheaper for Amazon to just throw the clothes out once they're done. And that I'd heard this other statistic in England specifically, that it's actually really common there to buy something, wear it once or twice and throw it out and get something new. And so clothing in the actual fashion department is just littering the earth with clothing. And I just thought, this is insane. And I thought, we could do better than that. That just, to me, just seemed ridiculous. Even if they, said, we're going to send these products to a place that can actually use the clothing after, something. So it partly was supposed to be pointing towards we can do better in terms of the earth. So there's a few things that a few lines, if you listen to it, you'll actually hear that influence from the earth.
But the video is actually all around Hamilton. Some of the shots.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I also know, I've watched it a couple times, and I didn't see Dave Rave in it.
You saw Dave.
I didn't. I looked for him. I missed him. I've watched it two or three times now. But what I did catch on the back end of it was a nice in loving memory of Michael Northcott.
Yes.
And yes. That, I think that's fantastic. I had no idea that you were associated with him at all.
Yeah. Like you said, the video, it was supposed to be homage to like the city in one part. And because I love Hamilton, I mean, just to kind of go back to that, I'm going to talk about Mike because that's really important to me. But with respect to Hamilton, I'd gotten diagnosed with an illness at the very end of high school. And the first time, like, I thought kind of life is over as I know it in terms of music and everything else I was doing. And I just started staying home all the time. And I started just keeping to myself. And, I went out to, you know, someone said to me like, "Hey man, I'm playing a show tonight. How would you feel?" And Brody actually even contacted me saying, Hey James, how would you feel about doing a show at the Casbah?" And I thought like, I'm going to do terribly, but you know what? Like, it's always nice to see Brody. So I go out there. And then Adam Neumann, he's like, "Hey, how's it going, bud? I haven't seen you in a while." And he's catching up with me. And all of a sudden I'm having fun and out. And I just, I'd kind of, you know, in my head said, this isn't going to happen. And then the music awards came around and, you know, George Panagopoulos is coming over and saying, "Hey buddy, I haven't seen you in a long time. What's going on?" And I see like Lou Molinaro and he's telling me all these crazy stories.
Of course.
And I just thought, you know, in those moments, I thought, how blessed am I? To feel like, like everything was gone, and then to have all these people here with me. So it was just like,
but that
was a moment of bliss for me.
But that's a good thing. That's an uplifting thing. That's what you need in life. And I'm very happy that that happened for you, James, because that's awesome. Because you need those people to remind you that there are things that you still have to do.
Yeah, and. It was, you know, thanks to them that I didn't just kind of shack myself up in my house and shy away. So I really wanted to do something that just showed my pride in Hamilton and what Hamilton has to offer in music and everything. You know, like growing up, we had the Dirty Nil, Luke Bentham, and Kyle Fisher went to school with me. Yeah. And watching those guys just, you know, how passionate they were and how involved in their craft they were. And, you know, their Kyle's little brother was in my band, my previous band with the T-Rex Cineplex. And we got a ton of inspiration from those guys. And, you know, the Arkells, just seeing Max walking around town and trying to, you know, help out in any way he can, getting involved with like Dwayne Gretzky at those shows. Like it's just such a cool atmosphere to be a part of. And like I said, at that moment where I was kind of feeling at one of my lowest points and I had these people getting me out and feeling like I have a friend, like no matter what happens, like doesn't matter how sick you are, and someone coming out to support you. You know, I remember one of George's friends actually came out to a show, and Mark, and I just thought, this is so nice. Like nowhere could you have such a supportive group of people. So the video, I tried to get as many things from Hamilton as I possibly could just to show my appreciation.
Trying to wise, but they feel wrong in my mouth. Looking at you, see that we feel something else. Looks like I'm mad, but you read that one wrong. I'm just sad that we keep this going on. Hurts like hell, but I fall afraid. Cause somehow these fires never feel rain. But if they did, we'd just see the smoke. Breathing the toxins even when we choke. You
know what? One of the people who I want to definitely say something about is Kristen Archer. I'd seen her at the Hamilton Music Awards, and she was one of the people who she was I Heart Hamilton talking about this like passion of Hamilton and how she blogs about it all the time. And I just thought, you know, like at that point, I remember at school, there'd been some people saying things just like, oh, we're from Hamilton, it's a dirty hole. And people had said, say bad things about it, you know? And
yeah.
And I just thought, I never really thought too much about it because it was just kind of this, I don't know, culture, I guess you could say, of younger people. And when she said that, I thought, like, you're right. There's a lot of really cool things about Hamilton. And I started kind of digging into it. And I just started realizing, like, this place is beautiful, not just because of the people, but there's, like, actually, like, a ton of cool things you can do here. And it's incredible. And she opened me up to what this place is. So I think that was another thing that really played an impact in wanting to make a video purely showing off Hamilton.
Right.
And then in terms of Mike Northcott, you're hitting all the teary subjects today.
Hey, man, you know, these are all actually really good subjects, to be honest. It's on my end, it's nice to hear someone else say something good about other people, right? I can't always be the cheerleader guy.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to send you that message saying thanks for talking about Hamilton on Instagram and stuff. I think it's amazing that like people are really starting to embrace Hamilton. I'm seeing more and more of it, and I usually try to reach out and say something that I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like, this is actually such a cool spot. I mean, and it's growing day to day. Like Hamilton's, if it's not on the map already, it's going to be soon.
Yeah, we have so many different characters within the city. And that's why when I watched the video a couple times going, I don't see Dave. But then when I did, like I said, I caught that Northcott, but oh, wow, he's connected to Mike Northcott. And then you explained, you know, how you met him. But what was the significance pushing you forward?
With Mike Northcott, I'd actually, there's so many good memories. So how I got introduced to Mike Northcott was I actually changed schools to Yorkview, and I was in a Catholic school before that. I was a crazy kid, very busy body, you could say. And I changed schools, and I didn't really have any friends when I changed schools. And this one kid, he had hair like the lead singer of Sum 41, you know, this pointy blonde hair, and he was probably as crazy as I was. He was constantly running everywhere. Really interested in everything, and he'd helped me when I was getting bullied actually at school, and his name was Willie Northcott, and Willie's house was just on the corner a few blocks away from mine, and so Willie would take me to his house and we'd go there after schools, and he kind of just gave me that friendly feeling, that warmth, and Mike was a part of that. One of the things that we kind of bonded over was he would Mike wrote songs for Beyblade, the TV show.
Sure.
And he did stuff for Franklin and Roly Poly Oly with, I think it was some, I don't think it was Chorus Entertainment at that time, but it turned into Chorus eventually. And he would take us out to events that were associated with it. And he also, you know, let me use his guitars and stuff and taught me how to coil mic cables and stuff. Like, I remember, like, James, they come in a specific form and you put them in the same form, James, just coil it the way you got it. And I'll never forget him teaching me this and showing me and telling me, get your own gear, James, it's about time. And would always be like digging right into me all the time. And later on in life, you know, I'd always, every time I got new songs, I'd go straight to Will's house and I was so excited because I wanted to show him, because he was kind of somebody I looked up to. I looked up to him. And I'd always show him stuff, and he'd always say, James, this is getting really good. You're definitely growing. And he'd give me a little bit of feedback and stuff like that. But he'd always be tough on me, which was just, I think it was a Mike thing. And I thought he didn't like me, but that we were still close. It was like, I don't really know exactly what that relationship would be called. And one day my dad worked for him, and my dad told me and another guy that he said that out of our group and stuff like that, if he saw anybody doing anything with music in the future, he thought it would be me. And I didn't. I didn't know that that's how he was feeling.
It's nice to have a mentor see something in you that you didn't see. And it's very important to have those experiences in life, to have someone that can uplift you and see something. You don't, especially if you didn't know that. That's it's very understandable to be very happy and appreciative of that.
And I didn't realize why Mike was always so tough on me, but that was kind of a moment where I realized it's because he believed in me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he passed, I guess the thing that was tough was that every time I'd write a new song, I'd go to him, you know?
Absolutely. You have to bounce it off of him.
Yeah, and he was just like one of those people who I trusted his opinion because he'd never lie. The one thing about Mike is, like, if he thought something was bad, he'd just be like, James, this isn't good.
Oh, I've heard it. I've heard some things of him where he pointed out to me years ago when I was in my early 20s, as we were standing at the Corktown and I was booking it, he would turn to me and go, this is terrible. Yeah. Why did you do this? And I'm like, Mike, I don't play in the band. He says, but you know, this could sound better if you did. I'm like, yes, Mike, I know, Mike, but I didn't know. Like, I'm not a technical person, but I figured it out. Right. You know, I would take it up with the sound and going, yeah, this could sound a lot better. Right. So, and he also introduced me to a lot of great bands back in the day,
like
Battle Tramps and all these other ones in the early 90s that were of alternative country, and they were fantastic. And, you know, Sarah Harmer, was in the Saddle Tramps and went on to great fame in Canada and internationally, really. So, yeah, so he was like one of those guys. I understand it. I get it, because you could ask him something and he would be like, okay, yeah, this is good, but this could be better here, that sort of thing. And you need those people.
Yeah, and that was one of, like, I think the great roles about him. I've really appreciated straight shooters, I think, in music, because there's a lot of people who will tell you something's good. But, like, you know, that's not, I remember it was funny, in Olympia basketball camp, one of the coaches said something. He said, you know what, you know how you know you're a good basketball player? Not when someone tells you that you're a good basketball player. It's kind of when they don't have any words for it. He said, it's like when somebody says, that kid, he's got it. And he said, when you hear that, that's when you kind of, you know that you're onto something, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, when someone just kind of gives you just like the, yeah, it's good, you're not looking exactly for that. And Mike would kind of give you all the steps towards what's going on. He was a straight shooter. He was someone who wanted to develop you. He'd talk about anything. Like, he was just a really helpful guy.
Yeah.
But it always came off a little bit, like, intense at times. But you know what? I loved him for it. So
I just I call those type of people bob and weave, because it's coming and you better duck. And you better learn very quickly, or it's going to keep coming. So they bring you up to speed really quick. You do need that. So you released that single back in November, and which brings us now to What You Really Want. Is that's the second single? Sorry?
I actually released some stuff in between there. There was one song in between there called Only For You.
You've only sent me two songs.
Yeah, I sent you two songs, but I figured, you know what, like, I just know, I forget who I was talking to, but someone messaged me saying, like, can you send MP3s? Because my inbox is packed and I have no more room on there. So I thought, okay, yeah, like, I could definitely start sending you MP3s and stuff. So I tried to send two. I tried to condense it for you, so it's I did What Are We Doing Here in the Summer. I have some weird obsession with putting what in my titles. What Are We Doing Here was in the summer. That was like the first one, like, in pop genre, really. I did one before that called I'll Be Your Wall. And that one was me branching from my rock into the pop genre. And then I did We Can Do Better, Crazy For You. And then this one right now is What You Really Want. Hey, this is James Alphonse. You can check me out on Spotify, Instagram at James Alphonse Music, and Facebook, and anywhere else.
Who's the name they gave you? It means nothing. No, you can let it get through to your thoughts. Don't get lost. Sabotage is trying to throw you off just because they see the same thing I see. But jealousy is nasty. You don't want another rose and like, 'cause you never were about that life. regrets of hidden aftertaste. People feeding off of your answers and the words you waste. Vultures pick at the bones, it's just what they know. They'll point to the clones and hand you their clothes, yeah. You don't need another stupid fight, cause you know it's just another night. They make you feel like you're all playing at light, but you know you taste like
what are we doing? 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 What are we doing?
but I let you set the pace. Now I'm all over the place. I've never been this guy before. Now I'm always wanting more. But you always got another place you want to be. Maybe it's nothing, but we can make it something you can't live without. There's no rhyme or reason why I get this feeling. I can't figure you out.
This is CIOI 101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air.
Dance. knot like a ball in a chain.
All I wanna do is get off.
Things to come. I got my force of God. The cross of white iron.